All right, sorry about that. Good morning, everybody. So I wanted to share with you a little drasha on Parsha Shelach. Years ago, I wrote an article on things to consider when choosing a name for a child. You know, when I wrote the article, someone told me, Rabbi David Friedman from DRS said, you shouldn't write this article because everyone who has every crazy question about naming a child is always going to call you because they'll assume that you're the expert. And over the years, I've probably been approached about questions relating to that article more than anything else that I ever wrote about. And, you know, sometimes I wrote about some controversial things, but this is, for some reason, it's strikes a chord in people. And the ironic thing about it is that there really aren't too many halachos about choosing a name for a child. In fact, there's really only one halacha, and that is Shem Rishaim Yirkav. We just had it recently in Daf Yomi. You're not supposed to name for a Rasha. So there really shouldn't be like any Adolf Hitlers or Joseph Stalins running around our shuls and our yeshivas. Everything else is a minhag. The Gemara records this lone halacha along with the reverse idea that Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Whenever we mention the name of a Tzadik, we're always supposed to try to associate him with something positive. And it would be a disgrace to a great person if we were to associate him with something negative. So against that backdrop, the Torah's description of the Meraglim who descended from Yosef is very surprising. When we describe the spy from Shevet Ephraim, Yoshua ben Nun, the Torah tells us, Lemata Ephraim, Yoshua ben Nun, making no mention of the true patriarch of that Shevet, who's Yosef HaTzadik. On the other hand, when we describe the spy from Shevet Menashe, who succumbed to sin, right, who was one of the bad spies, the Torah tells us, Lemata Yosef, Lemate Menashe, Gadi ben Susi. So essentially, they both come from Yosef, but the one who worked out with, the one who was a tzaddik, the one who stood up to the pressure, he doesn't get associated back to Yosef. We have an opportunity to associate the tzaddik Levracha, and we don't. So why is it that we associate Yosef with the spy who sinned, and not with the spy who successfully remained loyal to the Ribbono Shel Olam and to Moshe Rabbeinu? Also, there's an often repeated passage in the Yerushalmi that seems popular with preschoolers, at least, but may require an additional analysis from an adult perspective. The Yerushalmi tells us, Tanur Rabbi Hoshaya, Yud Shenital Me Isari Imenu Olav Nishtatech Tvei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Va'amar Ribono Olamim Akartani Me Atzadeka Sazos Amar Lei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Tzei Lecha Mishavar Yisan Notun B'Shem Nekeva U'Besov Teva Chayecha Shani Nosemcha B'Rosh Zachar U'Bereish Teva Hado D'Chsev Yikr Moshe Loshe Binun Yoshua. Essentially, the little letter Yud comes and complains to the Ribbono Shalom, you know, I used to be in the name of Sarai, and then you changed your name to Sarah, and now I'm all lonely, I have nowhere to go. And Kadosh Baruch Hu says, no, you were in the name of a woman, and you were at the end of her name. Now I'm going to put you in a place where you're in a man's name, and you'll be at the beginning of his name, and that's supposed to be the comfort for the letter Yud. The question is, the emphasis on the move from a female to a male is very troubling. What's the advantage of being associated with a male? Can a woman not be as great a tzaddikas as a man can be a tzaddik? Was Sara Imenu not righteous enough? Is that really an upgrade to go from Sara to Yoshua? Yoshua is very great, but Sara Imenu? And also the most obvious question of why Moshe didn't similarly bless any of the other spies. At the end of the entire story, after the return of the Meraglim, the Torah tells us about Kalev, that Va'avdi Kalev Ekev Ha'isa Ruach Acheres Imo Va'yamalei Acherai. So why is Kalev singled out as having a Ruach Acheres? Didn't Yoshua also have a Ruach Acheres? Why is it only Kalev that we identify? And the answer may lie in the proper understanding of two separate points. First of all, the Meraglim had a dual mission. We use the term spy, but when you read the Psukim, there wasn't much in what we would call covert operations. You know, these were not like CIA agents. There wasn't really so much of a covert operation. There wasn't much uncovering battle plans or the like. They were told to do two specific tasks. They were supposed to see Uma Aretz Hashmena Hi Amraza Hayeshba Eitzim Ayin. They were supposed to report on the general condition, the goodness of the land. The Jewish people would find encouragement in knowing that they were fighting for something worth fighting for. And they came back with the magical fruits and the glowing reports of an Eretz Zavas Chalav U'Dvash. They reported back faithfully about how great this land actually was. And then they had another mission. They had to scout out the prospects of war. Where would the greatest challenges lie? Where were the greatest vulnerabilities that we could possibly exploit? So once we understand the mission, it's important to understand the dual nature of Shevet Yosef. All agree that Yosef is broken into separate tribes for Yerushas Haaretz. That's clear from the reading of Sefer Yoshua. A simple reading of Parshas Naso reveals that there were two distinct Shvatim with regard to the karbonos of their respective Nesiim at the Chanukah Samishkan. What's not as clear is whether Yosef went to war as two separate tribes or they went to war as a single unit. It's very possible that in fighting wars, Yosef was to be considered a single unified tribe. Yeshua's mission as the representative of Ephraim may have simply been to scout out the various qualities of the land in anticipation of Yerushas Haaretz. The second mission of scouting the prospects of war, maybe that wasn't even Yeshua's job at all, because Gadi ben Susi the Mate Menashe was already taking care of it. Meaning it could be that Menashe and Ephraim, yes, they're two different Shvatim as far as Yerushas Haaretz, that we know to be the case, and therefore they each need separate Meraglim for that element of what the Meraglim had to do. But for what the other element of what the Meraglim had to do, to check out the prospects of war, maybe Yoshua had the day off when they were looking at those things. Because Yoshua didn't, because Shevet Yosef was one Shevet as far as that's concerned. There's no reason that they needed two spies from that perspective. So against that backdrop, Rabbi Tzal Rudinsky points out, the answer to our questions becomes pretty self-evident. The tefillah that Moshe offered on behalf of Yoshua was to be saved me'atzas Meraglim. Not mechet hamaraglim. The challenge for Yeshua was not to stand up to anybody and express an independent spirit. It was just stay out of the discussion entirely. It's not your discussion. Keep to what your task is. Stay away from whatever they're going to be doing. It's not your business anyway. Don't stick your head into something that could go awry when you don't have a responsibility to be involved in that. His task was not to evaluate the prospects of war. And that's where the Meraglim sinned. The Meraglim didn't sin in their assessment of the land. Their assessment of the land was gewaldic. They said it was a fantastic land. Their sin was in then suggesting what that means for us as far as our war prospects are concerned. Yeshua, stay away from Atzas Meraglim. Don't be involved in those discussions. Those aren't for you. And that may be why Moshe Rabbeinu added a letter from the name of a great woman. Chazal tell us that Ein Darko Shel Isha Lasos Milchama, that it's the Darko Shel Ish Lasos Milchama, Ein Darko Shel Isha Lasos Milchama. Sarah, in particular, is singled out as an example of Nashim Ba'ohel Tavarach. If Yeshua can just manage to stick to his limited mission and avoid getting dragged into the ugliness of the plans of the Meraglim, then he would be successful. No such bracha can be offered to the other Meraglim because they couldn't stay out of that discussion. That was part of their job, was to figure out whether they could fight a war. Whether they would respond appropriately was left entirely to their Bechira Chavshis. Yosef is only mentioned in connection with Gadi and not with Yoshua, because only Gadi ben Susi represented the complete mission of Shevet Yosef, the complete spy mission. Yoshua only had a partial mission, half the mission, and Kalev is singled out after the fact for having a contrarian spirit, a ruach acheres that he had, because he's the only one that actually had to stand up for something. Yoshua's job was to stand down. Kalev's job was to stand up. Kalev's job was to fight back. And that's why he's the only one who spoke. You know, these are the two great heroes of the Meraglim story, are Yoshua and Kalev. They play very, very different roles. Well, Yoshua's role is just stay out of it. Kalev's role is to stand up to the pressure. And that's really part of our task throughout the generations in avoiding Lashon Hara and really avoiding discord and machlokas in general, is not only to say the right things, but in knowing when not to get involved at all. The ability to take a step back is critical and can be the way that we can wield the greatest influence. You know, I read a story from the son of a Talmud Chacham once that said as follows. He said, "I've seen people tell him things about himself, terrible things, but it doesn't matter what you say, how terrible, he will find the human in you and in him. Once I told him of my ardent plans to wreck everything in my life, to turn everything, career, religion, upside down, I thought my news might give him a heart attack. So as a precaution, I arranged to tell him of my plans in the office of a top psychoanalyst, a former Marine. I told him frankly that the life I had built and that we had built together was false and needed to be knocked down in one fell swoop. I will never forget the look on his face. Total concern and complete silence at the same time. It was the silence that only true and wise love can give. Somehow this experience of confiding him in it and his response helped me to find strength. This wisdom, his wisdom, became embodied for me in the Beis Medrash, the fountain where people gather every morning and evening to drink. Meaning sometimes there's a time for milchama, and sometimes there's a time just to stand down, a time to stay away from things. And that's part of the trick of knowing how to handle machlokas appropriately, how to handle lashon hara appropriately, how to stay away from lashon hara appropriately. Yeah, there are times that call for us to just stay far away from things. There are times that we're called upon to be a Yehoshua, and we need Hadracha to know when those times are, when it's really not our business, when we don't need to be Machnis Roshenu Bein Aharim. We don't need to put our heads in between the mountains, in between people who are arguing, when it's not our Machlokas to have. And then there are times, you know, particularly when there's a Bizayon Tamidei Chachamim going on, when there are things when it is Nogaya to us, where it is our obligation to stand up for Kavodat Torah, where it's our obligation to stand up and to have our voices heard in order to make the proper macha'a. We have to know when we're supposed to be a Yehoshua and when we're supposed to be a Caliph. And with that, I wish everyone a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos.